south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, how about this for some bad news? According to a Gallup poll that just came out, covering 20,000 working adults in the U.S. and Europe, turns out, in the poll, 13% of adult workers like or love their jobs. In fact, they say when they're at work, it doesn't even feel like a job. And as you might have guessed, a good percentage of those people are nerds working from their houses without an office to go to. In other words, they've found their money-making niche on the internet. All right, so 13% like or love their jobs. Oddly enough, something like 90% of software developers love their jobs. Hey, to each his own, but to me, that's got to be one of the most boring jobs in the world. But really, thank God or Buddha or somebody for software developers, huh? We wouldn't have the internet without them. Oh, and as a corollary to that, 90% of that 13%, those people who love their job so much they don't consider it work, well, they indicated in the poll that they were their own boss or had their own companies. Makes sense? In other words, they had no boss above them to lord over them, give them orders, or give them grief. However, the real sad part of this poll is they found out 63% of adult workers are what they call sleep workers. That is, they kind of zombie out, do their jobs like good little robots, and when they're done for the day, they can barely remember what transpired. Sleep workers, great term, huh? It's sort of like when you do a long-distance drive and you end up at your destination and you say to yourself, wait a minute, that whole drive went down like automatic pilot. I hardly remember anything about the road. In other words, the majority of people, that 67%, they don't exactly hate their jobs, but they'd much rather be somewhere else. Meanwhile, on the other end of the spectrum in that poll, you've got 27% of people, that's more than a quarter, one in four working adults, either hate or fear their job or both. Oh, and when they talk about fear, they don't mean fearing your job, they mean fearing your boss. In other words, they mostly hate their job because they hate their boss. Wait a minute. You mean some bosses are dicks? How's that happen? Anyway, we're talking about slightly over a quarter of all workers. These are people who actually talk about fearing their boss. He's such a jerk. Oh, did I say he? Well, in the case of my early days as a company man, yeah, when I first got out of engineering school, I actually worked for a very big company. Maybe I'll tell you about it sometime. You'd know the name for sure, especially guys who like to work on cars. Anyway, back then, when I worked for the man, it was always a he I had as a boss. Never had a woman boss. Though, I understand, and I saw some data on this too, men usually don't mind working for a woman boss. It's women who, more often than not, don't like working for a woman boss. I wonder why that is. Though I do know, the more women you have in a company or in a particular department, the more it resembles a soap opera. Hey, wait a minute, Johnny. You're treading on thin ice there. That's sexist, Johnny. I just might switch the dial. Well, guess what? I don't have any advertisers to please or suck up to, so I can actually tell the truth. Isn't that refreshing? No fake news here. No matter how it might hurt people's feelings. Boo-hoo. So then what do all those stats about people loving and hating their jobs have to do with Latin America? Well, it's directly related to the so-called happiness factor that seems so prevalent here in Latin America. I mean, really, how can you be happy when you hate your job or you end up zombieing out at your job 8 hours a day, not to mention you have to drive an hour or two just to get to that crappy soul-deadening job that sucks the life and the energy out of you? Now, to my mind, and a lot of other people, I think, that's the true definition of hell. Driving an hour or two each day for years on end to a job you hate. Or just zone out in because it's totally unfulfilling. Now, as for Latin America, you gotta wonder, are those numbers the same? Do the same 13% more or less of working Latin Americans love their jobs so much they don't consider going to work work? Well, you know, if you think those Gallup numbers are universal, you'd be dead wrong. Because the difference between the first world, that is the U.S. and Europe, and Latin America, is rather stark. Turns out, present-day Latin American workers are much like our parents' generation. For example, for us boomers anyway, our parents were the ones that grew up in the 40s and 50s. And the general attitude was that it was a generation happy and grateful just to have a steady job. It didn't have to be interesting or mentally satisfying. It just had to be steady, with the checks coming in every week, and have some benefits attached, like health insurance, whatever. Now, if you're old enough to remember or you heard the stories, that generation who came of age in the 40s, 50s, even the 60s, the great majority stayed at the very same job, or at least within the same company, for sometimes 30 years. Where do you think that old cliche came from? Get your 30 years and out and get a gold watch. Fact is, I don't think anybody these days gets a gold watch anymore because no one stays at a job for 30 years. That's almost unheard of. Not if you're working for the man anyway. Of course, if you've got your own company or your own little business, you may put in that 30 years, but no one but you is going to give you that gold watch. Oh, and as far as that Gallup poll goes, there were some general and socio-psychological conclusions tagged onto the results of that thing. It turns out, after hacking through all that data, the key job-related factors that cause depression and actual physical loathing of a particular job. Surprisingly enough, it's not about the pay, nor the work environment, or even your co-workers or the management, unless your boss is a real a-hole. Turns out your state of mind at work and whether you hate, like, or love your job has everything to do with whether you have some kind of control over your workplace or are you just a cog in the machine. So it's not the work itself that's depressing. It's not having any control or any say in that job you're doing 8 hours a day. So if you have no voice in the decision-making process, eventually it'll wear on you and you're going to get depressed. Why do you think in the 60s and 70s, companies, especially big companies with a lot of factories, started putting in suggestion boxes around the plant? Because it was right about then there was a shift in workers' attitudes towards their jobs. That's when a certain awareness started creeping in and people started realizing just having a steady job and going to work every day didn't cut it in the job satisfaction department. In fact, in my dad's day, the term job satisfaction hadn't even been coined yet. So it was back in the 60s and 70s when big companies first started hiring so-called company shrinks who had nice little offices in the human resources department, also a newly coined term. In first world companies, that stuff's mandatory. But believe me, down here in Latin America, that stuff's still mostly unheard of, except with first-world franchises like McDonald's, Bayer, Walmart, Nestle's, and Costco. Why? Because the vast majority of workers still believe just having a job where they're assured a steady check that won't bounce and they get some kind of workers' benefits, that seems to be enough for the vast majority of the Latino population. For the average working-class Latino, that's life. And why? When adult Latin Americans are asked about whether they like their jobs or not, they almost never tell you they hate their work or their job sucks, even if it's a job us gringos and expats would never consider doing, because it might be, you know, quote, beneath us. Oh, and how about this for a grim statistic? According to a January 2019 report from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, that is, provided you trust U.S. government statistics, anyway, it says, the average American changes jobs an average of 12 times during his or her career or lifetime work experience. That means the average American these days changes jobs every 3 to 5 years. Now, the fact is, here in Latin America, there are lots and lots of maquilas. That means factories. They don't pay much, the legal minimum wage plus some benefits, which don't amount to much either. The fact is, here in Latin America, there are virtually millions of people working in those factories, people up north by you like to call sweatshops. It's a 44-hour work week, and the workers make, on the average, of $300 to $400 a month. But still, every day you drive by those factories and you see a line of 20 or 30 people applying for those so-called sweatshop jobs. Even at $300 or $400 a month, there's never a shortage of laborers. Sure, it's about the money, but more than that, it's about the steady paycheck and the job security. So let me ask you this. How many people do you know up in the States making minimum wage actually like their jobs? Chances are, if you know anyone that's over 20 working such a job, they're embarrassed to admit that they work at Starbucks, Wendy's, or Taco Bell. That, as opposed to here in Latin America, where the average person working for minimum wage at a company that pays out regularly, they're happy to state that fact. No embarrassment at all. Believe it or not, and you probably won't believe this, but though they may not be considered prestige jobs, they're considered very desirable and respectable jobs. And not, as we like to say in the States, the low rung on the ladder, the so-called entry-level job you take as a teenager because you absolutely need the money And, you know, even though you're never going to get a date with the homecoming queen or king, it's temporary. It's called paying your dues. One of the reasons for that attitude up in the States is, of course, and you heard me mention this in last week's show, that fully 40% of all adult males in the States by you have a bachelor's degree or better. And to end up working at Starbucks or Mickey D's with a college degree and hear you were going to conquer the world? What a mental letdown and a kick in the ego. Meanwhile, here in Latin America, where you've got only 2 to 3% of adults with a bachelor's degree or better. Well, that makes all the difference in the world. In attitude, goal setting, and what you'll settle for anyway. Because, you know, the other 97 or 98% without degrees absolutely know their job prospects are limited, but they can get a job. And they're ready and able to work hard at it, too. Most are just hoping to work at a factory or in a fast food franchise. Because then they can count on a steady check. And even if it's a couple $100 a month, if they're working for a big company that allows them to get credit, they'll qualify for time payments at the local stores. So they can buy furniture, appliances, etc. on time. Oh, and you know, here in Latin America, people get paid every 15 days, every quincena, they call it. Now, if you look at the word quincena, it's got the word quince in it, and quince means 15. By the way, that quincena thing always confuses gringos and expats, because most gringos up north get paid weekly. At least that's what it was like when I lived in Chicago, way back when. But what's even more confusing is the fact that Latin Americans get 2 extra months' pay a year, that is, if they're working on the books. They, by law, get an extra month's pay in December, and that's usually spent on Christmas stuff before they actually cash their checks. You know the drill. We've all been there. It's like gringos and tax refund checks. So anyway, by law in most Latin countries, around December, they get an extra month, and around July, they get an extra month, too. In some Latin countries, the extra month at Christmas is called aguinaldo. There's a tongue twister for you. Aguinaldo sounds like a fatal disease. Poor kid's in the hospital. He's got aguinaldo. Anyway, the extra salary in July is called bono 14. The whole thing is very confusing to fresh green gringos and expats, especially gringos and expats who start a business and hire Latino help legally on the books, that is, registered with the government and the decrepit Social Security and national healthcare system. Which is why so many gringos and expats are advised by their lawyers and accountants to hire their Latino workforce as independent contractors if they can. By the way, most of the time when you're hiring a guard, maid, or maintenance guy, when you're having that little discussion about what he or she's going to get paid, you can put the matter to them 2 different ways and let them make the choice. Though it seems the farther you are off the gringo tourist trail, the more they're likely to ask to remain off the books. They'll say, just give me the cash. Because they know when they're on the books, there'll be some deductions for the government every month, just like what happens to you up in the States. Of course, compared to the U.S., the percentages are really small. But still, when you're only making $300 or $400 a month, a 4%, 5%, 6%, or 7% deduction means a whole hell of a lot. All right, full disclosure now. I've been down here something like 30 years now, right? I've had numerous gardeners, maintenance men, and cleaning ladies, and I've never had one on the books yet. They almost always want to get paid in cash. Now, of course, technically that's against the law. They're all supposed to be on the books, and they know it. But believe me, it really makes life a lot easier when you pay them in cash, for both of you. Otherwise, your lawyer, accountant, or his accountant will get involved because you'll have to submit quarterly and monthly statements to the government, withhold the deductions, turn them over to the government, and on. Almost all gringos and expats would rather skip that. And the workers would rather skip giving that 4%, 5%, 6%, or 7% to the government every month, since most of them know they get absolutely nothing in return. Sound familiar? However, if you have a regular business, even a little storefront, and you hire 2 or 3 people, you'll want to have your workers on the books. That is, unless they're working part-time. Then you could skip it, and it's totally legal as long as they're working part-time. However, if you have more than one full-time employee, I highly recommend you put them on the books so you don't run afoul of the law. The thing is, if you have an employee off the books who gets pissed off at you, they can put the finger on you to the government and cause you some real trouble. However, when it comes to your household help, like maintenance, gardeners, maids, etc., the laws are extremely lax. Not to mention practically everyone who has a decent job in government has a maid or a gardener off the books too, if you know what I mean. Yep, governments everywhere are full of slugs and hypocrites. Then again, that's part of the job description, isn't it? All right, little disclaimer here. I'm not advising you do anything illegal. I'm just giving out the information and letting you know what most gringos and expats do. You do tune in to find out that stuff, right? Meanwhile, when you're smack dab on the gringo tourist trail, like Costa Rica, Panama, etc., almost all the help will demand to be on the books. Because, you see, when gringos are everywhere, workers know that if you commit any little infraction, they can really stick it to you. In other words, in gringoized areas, they really enforce the labor laws. For example, if you fire someone for stealing, or for not showing up, drinking, or sleeping on the job, whatever, you have to give them severance pay and vacation time, and in some cases, you even have to kick in to their retirement fund. That's right, even if you fire them because they stole from you. Believe me, in countries where gringos have flooded in, like Costa Rica, they've enacted some pretty tough labor laws. Hey, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Only workers aren't stupid, and many of them have figured out the hacks. That sounds familiar too, huh? All right, now let's switch gears a little bit and talk about gringo security and safety. I get lots of emails about this, and I talk about it sometimes. Now, I just ran across an article, came out a couple days ago, that gives us a pretty good overview of what it's like to live like a gringo or expat here in Latin America, both on, off the gringo tourist trail, and out in the county, in the boonies, and in the cities. It's all about safety and security. Now, this article comes from a brand new doctoral thesis paper from the University of Edinburgh. The author is Kelly Fowler. And here's what she found, though she may be a he, I don't know. Talking about Scotland now. Anyway, this research about gringos and their safety in Latin America focuses on expats living in Ecuador, Costa Rica, Panama, and Spain. Now, I hope you notice, too, all those places are on the gringo tourist trail. So as we go through this, I'll be making some of my own observations about gringos and expats living off the trail. So anyway, the article starts out by saying, quote, "What we've found in our study is that gringos and expats living in cities among the local population are far less conspicuous than those living in the countryside and thus are less vulnerable to crimes. This is true in Ecuador as well as in other major expat destinations," talking about on the gringo tourist trail. "The study shows," it says, "city expats suffer far fewer cases of crime such as home invasions, kidnappings, and physical attacks, including household break-ins." Then it says, "While in Ecuador, Fowler's work looked at crime against expats in Cuenca, Vilcabamba, Cotacachi, and Quito, as well as several small coastal communities." Then it says, "She was assisted in the project," oh, so it is a she, "in the project by a former criminology professor and part-time Cuenca expat, Martin Simmons, who interviewed more than 100 Ecuador expats, most of them from the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. One thing we found," it says, "that a surprising number of crimes against expats go unreported, and this is true in Ecuador as well as other Latin countries. Oddly enough, her investigation shows that only half of the serious crimes against foreigners were reported, with victims telling us," she says, "they don't report crimes because the perpetrators tell them they will take revenge if they do." And it says some of the expats that they interviewed said they didn't want to attract attention to themselves by reporting the crimes. However, and this is key, she says in some cases the expat victims themselves were involved in illegal activities or were in violation of their visas, etc. So naturally, if they're involved in illegal activities or are in the country, quote, illegally because they're past their visa date, they're not going to run to the police if their iPhone gets stolen. Then she says, oddly enough, sometimes the bad guys are aware of this, that the gringos have overstayed their visas or are doing something illegal themselves. They know those victims will not make the report. It's like crimes committed between drug dealers, she says. Which begs the question, me Johnny here again, by the way, is stealing from a thief a crime? You know, when I was young, I used to think the world was black and white, but it sure ain't. Now, let this sink in. She says one of the more surprising findings of the whole study is the involvement of other expats in crimes. She says, "We went into this project thinking that almost all the perpetrators of crime would be locals, but found that other foreigners were often involved. In fact," she says, "in most of the crimes that were not reported, victims often suspected other gringos and expats were part of the plot." All right, me Johnny again piping in. You longtime listeners have heard me tell stories about when I used to live on the tourist trail in Costa Rica. I lived there 2.5 years. I witnessed many such cases of gringos ripping off other gringos, and that happened in the early 90s. In fact, if you go way back in the expat files, you remember me telling a story about a guy I watched resell the same piece of beachfront property in Costa Rica at least 6 times. Now, I know, you're wondering, how was I able to see that? And why didn't I blow the whistle on the guy? Well, briefly, it was like this. My gringo music party rock band used to play at a place called the Beetle Bar, right off the Central Park in San Jose, Costa Rica. We were sort of the house band there for a year or so. That was a bar that was very popular with gringos. I mean, it was called the Beetle Bar, and it was Beetle-themed. And it seemed every gringo that landed in the country eventually ended in that place for a drink or two or to party or watch the band, whatever. So it was loaded with gringos. And when I was sitting at the bandstand, I noticed there was a gringo with a big ring binder with lots of photos in it. He must have had 50 photos of 50 different properties, and nearly every one of them had a little sticker on it that said sold or pending a deposit or something like that, always in English. So he'd sit at the bar and slowly thumb through it. Naturally, newly arrived green gringos would sit next to him and say, "Hey, are you a realtor or something? What you got there?" He said, "Yeah, this folder's full of choice properties, but they're all sold." And then the gringo's curiosity would be piqued and he'd want to see. He'd look through the folder and all the sold stickers on them and all the ridiculously low prices they were going for. And the gringo Mark's eyes would bug out with excitement. He'd say, "Yep, they're all sold except, wait a minute, I've got two that I haven't got the deposits on yet." And to make a long story short, he'd end up not selling, but optioning the same pieces of land over and over again for around $5,000. In other words, you could buy an option for a year for $5,000. In other words, you had to come up with the money within a year. That was his spiel. And the next day, he'd be there again to meet the guy, all the paperwork in order. The idiot green gringo would write a check or do a wire transfer for $5,000, and he just bought himself an option on a beautiful piece of beachfront property that's been sold 4 or 5 times. Actually, not sold, optioned. You know the difference, right? Turns out everything was phony about this guy except the property. He'd take you out there to look at it, but they weren't his to sell. However, he was a great con man and could spot a fresh green gringo with great expectations and rose-colored glasses a mile away. Because, you know, for ages, Costa Rica has always been the first stop for gringos and expats in Latin America, except for Mexico. Why? Because they heard it's safe and it's got no army. And yet never read anything in the papers about narcos or gangs or anything like that. But believe me, they've got plenty of petty crime. And it's almost always against clueless gringos who come down and see the beauty of the place and are hit with that tropical breeze as soon as they get off the airplane. They're thinking, "I'd like to get a piece of this, but it's probably way too expensive." But a $5,000 option on a piece of land they're selling for, let's say, $25,000. Now, that's manageable. At least that's what's going through their minds. Let's put it this way. If you lose $5,000 in a scam like that, it's not going to put a dent in your lifestyle. It'll piss you off and make you feel like a jerk. And chances are you're not going to go to the cops because you don't speak Spanish and they're just going to laugh at you. Anyway, you won't know you've been ripped off for months and months once you're back in Cleveland or Chicago and you try to email WhatsApp or Skype with the guy and he doesn't return your messages. So what are you going to do 5 months later when you finally figure out you've been had? You gonna fly back down to Costa Rica and get a lawyer and try to take it to court? You kidding? You won't get to court for 2 years. And that's bound to involve many trips back and forth and many postponements and cancellations. By the time you're done, it'll cost you $5,000 a couple of times, guaranteed. In other words, as the Chinese say, once you realize you're in a hole, quit digging. And as for me, seeing that guy come in every week sitting in the same place, roping in clueless gringo after clueless gringo, I finally said to the owner, a Canadian guy, and that's another story, he didn't really own that bar because he got scammed too. In his case, by his Costa Rican girlfriend who lied to him about the paperwork on that bar. Anyway, I said, "Man, how could you let that happen? You see what's going on." And he said, "Johnny, I've warned that guy, even threw him out a couple of times. But you know what? In the end, I thought, why not let him stick around? Someday, one of those pissed off gringos is going to walk in here looking for him, and we'll all get to see him get his ass whooped from here to Panama. So payback might be coming, maybe." And he's right. If I was a gringo who'd got scammed for $5,000 and I came back down again, I'd certainly go back to the scene of the crime, only I'd probably have someone with me and a roll of quarters in my hand. After all, I am from Chicago. But that's the perfect example of gringos ripping off gringos. Why? Because fresh green gringos are very susceptible. Besides, they don't speak Spanish. And who are these green gringos attracted to? Who do they gather around? Why, of course, gringos at the gringo expat bars. And you know, every expat gringo bar has a con man or two hanging around. So there's another good reason to learn your Spanish, huh? All right, so then the article goes on to say, expats in small communities often make themselves vulnerable to crime for two major reasons. First, they are highly visible, which means they make themselves targets. It's hard to miss the big, look-at-me gringo houses perched on the best spot in a small town. And many of the locals find luxury, gated, guarded communities kind of offensive because they can't afford to live there. You see, if you live in a community of mostly poor people and advertise your wealth as gringos tend to do, you'll make yourself a target. And secondly, the author of the study says, we found that many expats in small communities make little effort to get to know the locals. They prefer to be segregated with other gringos and expats, and many of them told us they have no intention of learning Spanish. And then Fowler says, she's amazed at the discrepancy in serious crimes against expats out in the country or the boonies in contrast to the cities. The study also finds good news for those living out in the country or the boonies. She says that petty crime is far less common out in the countryside than it is in the cities. Turns out, she says, small crimes against foreigners like pickpocketing and theft of your bags and purses and belongings on the street is much higher in the cities. Then she makes the statement that people talk about murder and homicide rates all the time. Though one important thing the study points out is that a high homicide or murder rate is not an indication that there'll be high petty crimes and misdemeanors too. Bottom line, if you refuse to speak Spanish, you don't mingle at least a bit with the locals, and you hang out strictly with gringos in gated guarded communities and at gringo and expat bars, though you may be spending your money and in the long run helping out the local economy, nevertheless, the locals will not view you as a friendly neighbor. All right, me, Johnny here. If that isn't reason enough to try to stay off the gringo tourist trail, or at least try to mingle, make some local Latino friends. So there you have it, and she makes a very good case. Oh, and by the way, I know about living in the boonies, and I found the people out there are friendly and nice, but you have to make the effort to meet them because they're a little shy and timid of gringos. Especially gringos and expats like me, dog lovers with Dobermans and Rottweilers. All right, we're near the end of the show now. Just a couple of announcements. Number one, this is seminar week. So the following two Expat File shows will be repeats pulled from the archives. You know, Johnny's Greatest Hits or Misses. Secondly, I just completed a new revision of my Latin American healthcare report. It's easy reading and fun, more than 100 pages, including the latest, greatest stem cell information, too. To pick up your copy, your PDF, just go to www.theexpatfiles.com and click on the healthcare report. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.